It's the Scotty Myers Show.
Hey, welcome to this week's edition of the show. Thank you so much for tuning in. Of course, you can check us out on social media. Find the show at The Scotty Myers Show on Facebook and Instagram, at Scotty Myers on Twitter. Give us a follow and all that kind of stuff. And of course, we're on YouTube as well. So we got a good amount of geek news to get to. Not as much. Things are a little, it's kind of like a lull period as we're getting into the big events of 2022. But that doesn't mean there's no news. So there's lots to get to. And gonna start in the realm more of pop culture. Normally, of course, we start, you know, Marvel, Star Wars, DC, somewhere along there. But I just wanted to bring this up because it's just, I'm kind of baffled a little bit by it, to be honest. So Disneyland Paris is celebrating its 30th anniversary soon. And Disney thought, let's give Minnie Mouse, you know, a little makeover. Of course, she always has the iconic red polka dot dress and bow in her hair or between her ears or whatever. And, it was like, let's give her a little update for the 30th anniversary of Disneyland Paris. So they got Stella McCartney, a famous fashion designer, to do a new suit for Minnie Mouse. And she came up with this blue pantsuit. It still has the iconic polka dots, but it's different coloring. And it looks interesting. Now, does it look as great as the iconic look? Nah, I don't think. It's not going to stay. But it's definitely not a look that you go, oh, that's fantastic, she should keep that. It's a look you go, it's interesting. Doesn't look terrible. But, of course, this has set off a fury online. Again, even though people know it's a temporary change, some people just losing their mind, saying it's too masculine, saying why are they trying to make Minnie woke and all this type of thing. And it's just like, can we calm down? I mean, she's coming up on almost her 100th anniversary, and she's had different clothes before. And it's not the first time she wore pants. She was for one of the Disney Cruise Line things, she had a whole captain's outfit, which included pants. So I think that's fine. Some definite people on the far right are comparing it to like a Hillary Clinton pantsuit, and so they're saying, "Oh, I see Minnie Mouse is a Democrat," and all this. And it's like, really? Are we putting politics into Mickey and Minnie? Honestly, it's not a big thing, but I'm amazed what gets people worked up on the internet nowadays. I always think we've hit the peak and then something else comes and creates a new peak for things to get worked up about. And we've got a few other things that people are worked up about too that we will get to in a little bit once we get into kind of some of the Star Wars news. We will start with the world of DC. Very quiet there right now. Rightfully so. Here we are kind of wrapping up January, so we're just over a month away from the Batman hitting theaters, and so all the focus right now is on the Batman. Rightfully so. As I said, the film looks amazing. All the trailers look great. The early word of mouth from people that have seen some of the test screenings is fantastic. So high hopes for the Batman when it hits on March 4th. If you want to grab tickets, though, you're not going to have to wait till March 4th. They're putting tickets on sale really early for this one. Tickets for the Batman are going to go on sale February 10th, so almost a full month before it hits theaters. And I have a feeling they're going to sell out. Like that first weekend, they're going to sell a ton of tickets. Interest in this one is huge. So if you want to be one of the first to see the Batman, circle February 10th on your calendar, put a reminder in your phone. That's what I've done because I want to go to the very first show that I can go to. If it's in an afternoon, I may have to take a day off work. I just need to see this movie sooner rather than later. So again, February 10th is when you'll be able to nab tickets for the Batman. And the one thing that is happening right now in DC that is out is Peacemaker, and it continues to not only get better episode by episode, and I'll talk a bit about episode 5 here in a second, but it continues to grow its audience. There was a recent report that came out that said right now Peacemaker is the top streaming show on the planet which is insane. I'm not 100% sure if that's accurate because I've seen reports, you know, from UK fans and stuff going, hey, Peacemaker's not over here yet. So not sure how it's the number one streaming show in the world, but it is definitely doing great numbers for HBO Max. So James Gunn has come out and talked a little bit about the future of Peacemaker. And I've already said that I'm praying we get a season two. And he said things are looking good, that we may get a second season of Peacemaker. He said, you know, most of the people seem to be on board with it, both as a, you know, on the corporate side and on the creative side. Everybody seems to want to do more with Peacemaker. And there's probably going to be more to mine. We still have a bunch of episodes to go, so I'm not sure where it is going. But where we sit right now after episode 5, in my mind, there's still a lot to take a look at with Peacemaker. And like every comic book company, DC has a ton of bizarre, low-level side characters that James Gunn could work with. Because I've said it before that I don't think Gunn would work best with huge name characters. Like if somebody came and said, oh, James Gunn's going to do The Flash or James Gunn's going to do Batman, I'd be like, nah, I don't think that fits him very well. But these kind of obscure characters that nobody has a preconceived mindset for work great for him because he can just kind of take them, keep the core of the character the same, but he has a lot of room to play, which he likes to play with these characters. So getting into episode five, probably the most action packed of the episodes so far, definitely the goriest of the episodes so far, including one death that I was laughing at, but at the same time felt bad about just because it involved a creature. I don't want to spoil it too much, but I was conflicted on the death. That's all I'll say. But it was gory and at the same time, somewhat funny. And we got to see a bit more of the growth of Peacemaker into a full-fledged person, which sounds like a weird statement. But, you know, we're talking about this guy that was very black and white in his thinking and very, you know, solo and very, you know, didn't want to have friends, and he's kind of letting people in now. It's really well written and really great to see. John Cena, I'll be honest, I didn't think he had these kind of chops in him when it came to acting, you know. And then seeing him in the Suicide Squad, he was one note for the most part. There were a couple of scenes that he did hit it, but really he kind of had one kind of mode in the Suicide Squad film, and that fit the character, so it wasn't a knock on him, it was just that's what the character called for at that time. And getting to see him go on this journey has been impressive from an acting perspective for John Cena, and then also just really, really cool for the character. And I mean, he's even got, I think DC knew they had a hit on their hands, they had a Peacemaker one-shot that came out in comic book stores this week, and that's getting good reviews. It's this bizarre, obscure character is now becoming a torchbearer for DC, which is really weird, but this is what Gunn does. Because when you think about what he did with Guardians of the Galaxy, kind of the same thing. Those are really obscure, deep-cut Marvel characters that only the hardcore fans knew about and have gone on to become household names. And I think the only thing holding Peacemaker back from being that massive household name is the fact that we're dealing with R-rated material, which fits the character and I'm totally cool for. But if this was, if they took the dick and sex jokes and cursing out of the show, which would take a lot out of the show, to be totally honest, because it fits so well, and kids were watching Peacemaker, I think kids would be into Peacemaker. He looks silly, but cool. You know, it's just, Gunn has a magic with these characters that, like I say, there's not too much attachment to, that allows him to take the essence of the character and just expand on it. And he's done a great job with Peacemaker. So really looking forward to seeing where the last few episodes take us. And speaking of the Suicide Squad, and Gunn has talked about this a bit, that his next DC project, once he finishes up Guardians 3, is going to be another Suicide Squad spinoff, and it looks like it's going to be another series for HBO Max, but we don't know who. So, of course, speculation has run rampant as to who it could be. I figured I'd run through some of the main contenders and just see. Polka Dot Man seems to be an online favorite, especially after his portrayal in The Suicide Squad. Now, the thing with the Polka Dot Man, spoilers if you haven't seen The Suicide Squad by now, but he doesn't make it out of there alive. So, you know, that would have to be a prequel. A little hesitant with that just because you already know the outcome of the story. So it doesn't lend itself to a ton of exploration because you already know kind of what happens to the character. Same with, you know, Rick Flag has come up as another potential, like a Rick Flag prequel. Now that one I'd be a tad more into just my affinity for the Suicide Squad comic runs. Rick Flag was always such a huge part of the comic. And so that one I would be a little bit more into. But same thing, we know where he ends up. So again, it takes a little bit of that character growth out of it. You know, we can see how he became the person we saw in the movie, but we ultimately know their fate. So I don't know that that pulls you in as much as you know, like Peacemaker does. King Shark has been brought up a lot online as a wish for people, and I'm on board with that. King Shark was great in The Suicide Squad. If you can get Stallone to do the voice, which I imagine he would. My only thing with King Shark is, I'm not sure the story you tell, and that's not my job, that's James Gunn's job, to come up with an interesting story, but just on the surface, I'm kind of like, what is the King Shark story, right? What is that story that he can tell? And also, would it be too costly? Because you got to, you know, render this shark for 8 episodes. And that's not cheap. So I don't know where that goes. Bloodsport would be great. His story from the Suicide Squad is so open-ended. You can leave it where he goes after that. The knock on the Bloodsport one, if I was going to have any, is A, can you get Idris Elba to do the series? That could be a huge mountain to climb because he's very busy. And secondly, would it not be too similar to Peacemakers? You know, there was a reason why they played off each other well in the film that they had similar skill sets. But to do an entire series with a very similar character might seem repetitive. So that's where I would kind of, and again, maybe the story wouldn't make it feel repetitive. But just on paper, I kind of go, eh, that's a little bit of the same, right? Like, you're giving me fried chicken over here and grilled chicken over here. Different, but really similar tastes. So, you know, maybe not the best plan. And that leaves Ratcatcher. And I know you're going, well, what about Harley Quinn? You're not getting Margot Robbie to do a series on HBO Max. It's just not happening. Believe me, out of all the possibilities, I would love me a Harley series. Especially if you could get Margot Robbie involved. But she said she wanted to take a break from the character. I know she's been really adamant about doing like something with Poison Ivy and a Gotham City Sirens type thing or another type of team up film for Harley. So I don't see her leading a solo series for HBO Max, especially too, they have the animated Harley Quinn series. So you don't want to overload HBO Max and have it be Harley Max. You know, as great as the character is, it could be overload. So it really leaves Ratcatcher 2, and I think that's where they'll go. Amazing story, lots to fill in with her. Where is she going to go after Suicide Squad? What road does she go down with her bizarro ability to, you know, control rats? Like, what story can you tell with her? And then also maybe fill in a bit more of her backstory as well, which seemed really interesting. And there was a lot of great sentimentality between her and her father. Even in the few scenes we got that in the Suicide Squad, you could bring that back. So my money would lend to Ratcatcher as the spinoff series. We'll see if I'm right or wrong, but that's where I put my money. And on top of that, who doesn't want to see more Sebastian the Rat? Right? Like, we all love Eagly on Peacemaker. In fact, the opening of this last episode of Peacemaker, Eagly was amazing. The star of the show for the first, I had me smiling from ear to ear. And Sebastian could have that same feeling, but a little bit different. And, you know, again, a little repetitive maybe with an animal sidekick, but I would lean Ratcatcher. You can weigh in. Let me know who you would like to see get the spinoff. Scotty Mars Show, Facebook, Instagram, at Scotty Mars on Twitter. We shall switch over to Marvel right now. A good amount of Guardians of the Galaxy news. Some film-related, some not film-related. At Epcot, where they're making the Guardians of the Galaxy Cosmic Rewind ride, roller coaster, they have installed the Nova Corp Star Blaster ship out front. So if you're headed to Epcot, even though they have the construction walls up around where the Guardians of the Galaxy coaster is going, you can still see the ship. So it's pretty cool. It looks great. I'm really excited for that coaster. It just looks really cool. It's going to spin you kind of around and show you screen. It looks like a really cool coaster, and that's opening this summer at Epcot. I was amazed they did it in the summer. When they said it was opening this year, I put my money on October for the 40th anniversary of Epcot, but they said this summer. So unless it gets delayed, expect Guardians. My guess would be like July. Right? That'd be my guess. So yeah, something to look forward to there. Tim Roth, of course, he played Abomination in The Incredible Hulk and then showed up in Shang-Chi. He has spoiled that he's going to be in She-Hulk as well. We all kind of expected it, but it also looked like She-Hulk was going down the roads of being a legal drama. Not sure exactly how Abomination falls into a legal drama, but hey, I'm a fan of Tim Roth's work, so I'm all on board for him coming back as Abomination. Daredevil, the Netflix show that was really good, is back in the top streaming rankings on Netflix. People really invested in seeing Daredevil again. Of course, that definitely ties into No Way Home. Nice to see that. The cast and crew were celebrating a bit online. Not sure what the future is for the Man Without Fear in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. If we're going to see another show, maybe Disney Plus, or are we going to get another film? That's kind of all up in the air right now, but I think the fans are saying they want more Daredevil, and Disney, Marvel, they're not stupid. They're going to give it to us. Speaking of No Way Home, and this was the smartest thing I think anyone, and just when I read this article, I was like, thank God you guys did that. They had a scene that had a Stan Lee lookalike doing kind of the Stan Lee cameo that, you know, Stan had become famous for doing in all the Marvel cinematic films up until his passing. And I understand why someone at a table would pitch that idea, and I understand why you might think that is a good idea, but I'm glad someone thought, we need to cut that. It would just seem inauthentic. I think at this point, anything with Stan Lee, you can mention him in ways that, you know, bring him up or something, but don't CGI him in, don't have a lookalike. He was a one-of-a-kind individual, and I don't think, you know, just trying to jog our memory of him with a copy is the way to go. I think, you know, just we have to leave it. It sucks that we don't have Stan Lee anymore, but we have to leave it like that, I think, unfortunately. I know if I had seen that scene, that would have been a tad disappointing. I would have felt like, oh, why, they didn't have to do that. I don't think I would have got the aw shucks feel that initially when someone pitches that idea, I think they would think that you would get. So glad to see that they cut that out. Still spinning out of Spider-Man is dominating, still number one at the box office. It had a little dip and then went back into number one. There's not much out right now either, but it's showing that the movie has legs, which usually superhero films don't, right? They have a big week, two, maybe three, and then they're done. And here we are over a month after release and Spider-Man's still doing well. Green Goblin, a skin for him has been released in Fortnite. So he's got a glider, which obviously makes sense. He's got his glider typically and all that. Skin looks good. It's a classic kind of comic book looking skin for Green Goblin, which is, in my opinion, the best look of the Goblin. And Spider-Man himself. Now, I know there was an article that came out that said they were going to do three more at least with Tom Holland and that. He's been doing some press recently for the Uncharted film. And he said that he's honestly not sure what his future as Spider-Man is. He doesn't know, what the plans are for him when it comes to the web crawl, the web slinger. And I just, I sit there and I go, Tom, you know what the future is. Like, honestly, you know, they're not going to let him walk after the success of No Way Home. So his future as Spider-Man is a giant bank truck pulling up to his house, dumping a pile of money in his driveway and pulling away. And on top of that pile of money is a script for the next Spider-Man movie. That is his future as Spider-Man, at least for one more movie. My guess is, like I say, they announced they wanted to do three more. I think you're going to get at least three more, if not more. People love his interpretation of Spider-Man. This has been the best received Spider-Man movie I can think of probably since Spider-Man 2, the Sam Raimi one. And yeah, I don't see him going anywhere anytime soon when it comes to Spidey. On to Guardians of the Galaxy 3, the film. James Gunn has confirmed, there was rumors out there, but James Gunn has confirmed that Guardians 3 will be the last time that we see this team. Now, that has led to a lot of speculation online as to, is someone going to die? Is someone going to just leave? And I'm not 100% sure. My guess would be that potentially Chris Pratt is going to be done and that we may see the last of Star-Lord in Guardians 3. He just seems to have a lot of other projects on the go. And I think somewhere Chris Pratt thinks he's a star. And he is, but he isn't. Like, there's these guys out there that have huge box office numbers when you look at their movies, but is it them or is it the movie? Right? Because when you look at Chris Pratt's success, it's Marvel films, which pretty much anybody can be in a Marvel movie nowadays. And then it's also Jurassic World, Jurassic Park franchise-based stuff, which also, no one was going to see those for Chris Pratt. Right? We're all going to see those for the dinosaurs. Those are the stars of those movies. And then he's going to voice Mario, which again, no one is going, most people don't go to an animated film because of who's doing the voice work at all. But especially no one's going because Chris Pratt is voicing Mario. The Mario Brothers animated movie will do well because people want to see the Mario Brothers characters on the big screen. So I can see him leaving and then potentially coming back after two or three box office bombs. That's kind of how I feel like it was going. I would say the same thing about Chris Evans. I think after Chris Evans has a couple of movies that maybe don't do the numbers that he hopes, I could see him, his agent or somebody going, you know, we can call Marvel and see if they can go into time and pull young Captain America out. And then depending on how the franchises are doing at that point, that might be something that Marvel might be inclined to do. So we'll see. But if you're a huge fan of Guardians of the Galaxy, be prepared for what could be a gut-wrenching experience with Guardians of the Galaxy 3, because Gunn has said this is it, the last time we will see this team. Now, as I say that, I'm also reminded in Batista saying that he didn't want to do another Guardians movie without James Gunn, and I think this is James Gunn's last Guardians film. So it could be Drax that takes off as well. It just kind of crossed my mind as I was talking about it. On to Star Wars. Really just a lot of Boba Fett talk that we'll get to here, and we'll break down the latest episode. But before we get into that, Rory Ross, he's an actor. He was actually in Book of Boba Fett. He played one of the Tusken Raiders. He's going to be in Obi-Wan playing a stormtrooper. Apparently, he says he has seen the trailer for Obi-Wan, and he said it's going to blow everybody's mind. Now, first off, fuck you. I want to see the trailer. I'm insanely jealous. And secondly, man, I can't wait to see Obi-Wan. So when will we get to see this trailer? No official release yet on a date or anything like that. I'm thinking, my guess is potentially we will see the trailer for Obi-Wan as at the end of the Book of Boba Fett. Kind of the way The Mandalorian gave us the Book of Boba Fett tease at the end of season two. I think maybe at the end of season one of the Book of Boba Fett, we will get a tease for Obi-Wan. Or after the Book of Boba Fett is done, so just not to distract from it, then Disney and Star Wars will come out and say, here you go. Here's your trailer for our next thing, Obi-Wan. And hopefully it's as good as this guy says it is. How can it be bad? Ewan McGregor is Obi-Wan. I just don't see how it can be bad. So latest episode of the Book of Boba Fett has been somewhat divisive online, not because people are saying it was bad or good. Everyone agrees that it was good. It just didn't have anything to do with Boba Fett. It was more of a Mandalorian story episode, which is fine. I'm 100% on board with this. Like, it was a great episode, and it kind of served as a teaser episode for maybe where season 3 of The Mandalorian is going. We got a ton of Mandalorian lore and story and backstory and all this kind of stuff in this episode. So first off, a lot of time spent with the Darksaber, giving us the history of the Darksaber, how it's wielded, who wielded it, and just interesting issues that the Mandalorian is having with this powerful, powerful weapon. It also sets up the story for season 3. Now, I won't spoil it, but let's just say he has to go on a quest to redeem himself. He has violated some rules, won't get into it, but he's going to have to go back to Mandalore to do that. And having said that, we got a glimpse of Mandalore during the Empire siege and the bombing of Mandalore and the droids walking through. Remember the security droid from Rogue One that everybody loved, and his death was super sad, at least for me? Those guys just walking, mowing things down, just firing blasters. It looked amazing. Like, that's really our first live action look at Mandalore, and it was during its destruction, but it was powerful and it was well done. They also did some great callbacks in this episode to the original trilogy. Mando's got a new ship, and it's basically a Naboo starfighter redesigned that looks badass. And when he's test flying it, he's flying it through the gulch that the pod race was in. And it was just cool. Like, as a fan, I love all the Star Wars stuff. So as a fan of even the prequel trilogy, I love seeing some of those locations again. And it was great. The episode is badass. Now, because of that debate on there online of, oh, was it the best episode of Boba Fett because it didn't have Boba Fett in it? It's become this debate of Star Wars fans of whether or not the Book of Boba Fett has ruined Boba Fett. And I would say I can understand it because everyone had an expectation of the character, right? We had kind of made up the character in our own mind of what he was like because we had so little to go on. Like, so little to go on for Boba Fett. Couple of lines of dialogue, less than 20 minutes of screen time. You know, it just... So we had this idea in our head. And then when we saw Jango in the prequel trilogy, kind of fed into that idea a little bit of who Boba Fett would be, because Jango was pretty straightforward, pretty merciless, pretty straightforward bounty hunter. The guy that we're seeing in the Book of Boba Fett is a guy that has been through some shit, right? It's a guy that had to escape the Sarlacc pit, barely held on to his life, has to basically recharge himself in a Bacta tank every night. That's not a healthy individual. So it's a guy that's learned his lessons. Like, working for Jabba basically got him killed, right? If it wasn't for his Mandalorian armor, he would have died in the Sarlacc pit. So he's learned some lessons and is a changed guy. So the guy that fell into the pit is not the guy that came out of the pit. So he's a different character. So when the debate comes online, did they ruin the character? I would say no, they've changed the character. And that's fine if you don't like this new interpretation of the character. I happen to enjoy it. I like seeing this wise bounty hunter that learned, why the fuck am I working for other people? Like, why am I risking my life for other people for a pittance of the money that they make? Why don't I make that money? I like seeing it. The show is a slow burn. I will definitely admit that too. So if you were looking for a ton of action, I've said this before, it's more of a gangster story than an action story. So I think everybody went into this with some definite expectations. And for some, those expectations definitely haven't been met. And I get that. I understand it. So to me, that argument is not so much that they ruin the character, but the character has evolved and changed, as we all do as we get older. So I think it's worth sticking it out for the ride. That's my take on it. If you're over Boba Fett at this point, I can get it. It's not the same guy that you played with as a toy as a kid. I get it. But I'm curious to see where he goes by the end of episode 7. Such a short series too, which is a little bit of a pain in the butt. I've also seen the argument online that maybe he never should have taken his helmet off. That one I don't agree with. Like, Bo-Katan takes her helmet off. There's different sects. Kind of like we have different religions, there's obviously different sects of Mandalorians and their beliefs. The Mandalorian, he obviously comes from a sect that doesn't take their helmet off. Boba, eh, he learned from his dad. His dad took his helmet off. So, you know, no harm, no foul in his world. That one is not an issue for me. I could care less if he takes his helmet off or not. That just seems like an aesthetic argument where it's like, oh, I would love the show if he kept his helmet on. Really? That's your issue? You know, to me, that's a petty one. You're nitpicking at that point. But we only got a couple episodes left of The Book of Boba Fett. So be interesting to see where it goes in a couple of episodes. And then if they'll do a season 2, I would be on board for a season 2 of The Book of Boba Fett. But I'm not sure if I'm in the majority or the minority on that one. That's something else you can weigh in on our socials, The Scotty Mars Show on Facebook and Instagram at Scotty Mars on Twitter. And that will do it for this week's edition of the show. Thank you so much for joining me. And until we chat again, have a great week.